I'm glad you're here today. Thanks for coming. I'm going to get right into Genesis, and we're going to continue on with what we've been digging into. As I said last week, there's a whole lot of detail in Genesis that unless you understand all these details, none of the rest of history will make sense. And so that's why there's going to be quite a while in Genesis with a lot of these details as God is making his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and we see how it's passed through history. Without that, nothing else really makes sense. So that's where we're going to be today. Genesis 15, we saw the covenant that God made with Abram, and he promised a piece of land for him and his descendants after him that extended from the Nile down in Egypt to the Euphrates over in modern-day Iraq. Quite a territory. We saw in Genesis 16 where Hagar and Abram had a child called Ishmael. And in this chapter, God tells Hagar that she is now with child and you will have a son. You shall name him Ishmael, for the Lord has heard of your misery. He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers. God speaks as he sees the world already. I mean, God has seen the outcome of all civilizations. He knows mankind. He knows individual people. He knows cultures. He knows nations. He's already seen it. And so some people see this as, well, he defines this person before he's ever even born. God's just speaking of the outcome of Ishmael and his descendants. He knows these things. He understands all of this. Genesis 17, God confirms his covenant with Abram, and it is also the sign of the covenant. It is the sign of circumcision. And so at age 13, Ishmael is circumcised. Abraham is 90, he's circumcised. So all of these things are happening. Well, Abraham is 100 about that time. And all of these things have happened, and this covenant that he keeps talking about has to do with not only descendants and blessings, but a piece of land. So as we get into today, we're going to see that this covenant continues, but not through a certain line. Abraham tells God, he says, I don't have a son. Would you please bless Ishmael? I've got Ishmael. And God says, don't worry, I'm going to bless him. He's going to be the ruler of 12 tribes. He's going to have descendants too many to count. All of these things. God understands that that is a son of Abraham, but not the son that he said that he is going to bring his covenant through. Again, before we get into all of the details here, I just want to be sure everybody understands one more time. I do not hate Muslims. I do not attack Muslims. The world, there's some wonderful Muslim people out here. I will attack their teachings. I will. Because if I read and compare it with biblical truth and it does not measure up, then it is my responsibility to get that out. Okay? I know there's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of people that believe that, hey, we believe close enough to the same thing. We just need to let it lie. I'm sorry. That's what we're doing with this class. I'm going to show you the things that just do not add up to biblical truth. And it is my responsibility, especially with you, to show you these things so that way you're aware as you read and hear. And there's a lot going on today, and there is a lot of impetus, a lot of emphasis to say, hey, you know what, we just need to let each other go their own way, and it's really not that different. All pathways lead to God anyway, and so y'all just need to get on board with it. That's not what the Bible says, and so that's what we're doing here. I will attack Islamic teachings. I'm sorry, that's all there is to it. Because if it is not biblical, then it needs to be exposed for what it is. And if it is not biblical, then you have to ask, where does it come from? Okay? And so we're going to have to ask that. All right, today we're going to be in Genesis 21. This is the birth of the promised son, Isaac. Genesis 21, verse 1. Now the Lord was gracious to Sarah as he had said, and the Lord did for Sarah what he had promised, of course. Sarah became pregnant and bore a son to Abraham in his old age at the very time God had promised him. Abraham gave the name Isaac to the son Sarah bore him. When his son Isaac was 8 days old, Abraham circumcised him as God commanded him. Abraham was 100 years old when his son Isaac was born to him. Okay, today, for the Jewish people, at 8 days old, they still circumcise their children, boys, as is told right here. This is still the covenant sign for the Jewish people. It still is. 3,500 years or 4,000 years later at this point, this is still important to the Jewish people as far as what God did with Abraham all the way back then. All right, so still at 8 days, 8 days old. Sarah said, God has brought me laughter, and everyone who hears about this will laugh with me. And she added, who would have said to Abraham that Sarah would nurse children? Yet I have borne him a son in his old age. The child grew and was weaned, and on the day Isaac was weaned, Abraham held a great feast. But Sarah saw that the son whom Hagar the Egyptian had borne to Abraham was mocking, and she said to Abraham, get rid of that slave woman and her son. This is Ishmael that they're talking about. For that slave woman's son will never share in the inheritance of my own son, Isaac. Okay? Sarah is making this division here. She is, you know, she's got trouble with Hagar and Ishmael now. And so she's making this division. She's saying, get them away from my true son, Isaac. Now then we read last week, she's the one that offered Hagar to Abraham to have a son. Well, now I got a problem with it. Okay. Don't blame you, but I understand, you have to see these details behind the scene here. The matter distressed Abraham greatly because it concerned his son. But God said to him, so Abraham sees Ishmael as his son. God said to him, do not be distressed about the boy and your maidservant. Listen to whatever Sarah tells you, because it is through Isaac that your offspring will be reckoned. Again, God says, I am working through the line of Isaac, Abraham to Isaac. Okay? This is the covenant line. He stresses this over and over. I will make the son of the maidservant into a nation also, because he is your offspring. God recognizes the son of Abraham. He recognizes Ishmael. He says, don't worry, I'm going to bless him too. He will be the father of a nation too. Early the next morning, Abraham took some food and a skin of water and gave them to Hagar. He set them on her shoulders and then sent her off with the boy. She went on her way and wandered in the desert of Beersheba. So this is southern Israel today, the Negev desert. When the water in the skin was gone, she put the boy under one of the bushes. Then she went off and sat down nearby, about a bow shot away, for she thought, I cannot watch the boy die. And as she sat there nearby, she began to sob. God heard the boy crying, and the angel of God called to Hagar from heaven and said to her, what is the matter, Hagar? Do not be afraid. God has heard the boy crying as he lies there. Lift the boy up and take him by the hand, for I will make him into a great nation. God says over and over, don't worry about Ishmael. I'm going to take care of him too. Then God opened her eyes and she saw a well of water. So she went and filled the skin with water and gave the boy a drink. God was with the boy as he grew up. He lived in the desert and became an archer. While he was living in the desert of Paran, which is in the Sinai Peninsula, his mother got a wife for him from Egypt. All right, so one more time. Remember, God and Abraham both see Ishmael as a legitimate son of Abraham. God says, I am going to bless Ishmael and his descendants. I'm going to bless them. My covenant, however, is going to flow through the line of Isaac. All right? There's the distinction that's about to come and be very important here just in a few minutes. All right? So that is Genesis 21. Genesis 22. We all know this story and how important it is in Judaism, as well as Christianity, because the sacrifice of Isaac is the prototype of God's sacrifice of his own son. What we read in Genesis 22, 2,000 years before Christ, is a prototype of what God did on this same mount 2,000 years later with his own son. So this is why it's important. Genesis 22. Some time later, God tested Abraham. He said to him, "Abraham, here I am," replied. He replied, "Then God said, take your son, your only son Isaac, whom you love, and go to the region of Moriah. Sacrifice him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains I will tell you about." Why did he say, "your son, your only son"? See, this is one of the verses that people use to say, see, Ishmael was illegitimate, and anything that comes to Ishmael is of no consequence. But God says, your son that I'm talking about, that the promised son, is the line of the covenant. That's why he says, your only son, meaning the only son of the covenant. He's not disparaging Ishmael in any way. He's just saying, this is the line I've chosen to work with, and it's through Isaac. He is still going to bless Ishmael, but the covenant will flow through Isaac. Early the next morning, Abraham got up and saddled his donkey. He took with him two of his servants and his son Isaac. When he had cut enough wood for the burnt offering, he set out for the place God had told him about. On the third day, where else does it happen 3 days? Let's see. See, this is why this story is so important for Christians, because God is showing all the way through the Old Testament what he's going to do whenever he comes to earth in the form of the man, Jesus Christ. Okay, this is it. So there's this three-day period here. On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place in the distance. So there in southern Israel, leaving southern Israel, it's a three-day journey up to this spot. Wherever this spot is, we're going to see this later. He said to his servant, "Stay here with the donkey while I and the boy go over there. We will worship, and if we come back..." No. See, think this through. Abraham is saying, when we come back to you... Now then, think this. Abraham has been told by God to take his son, his loved son Isaac, up on the mountaintop to sacrifice him. Now then, why is it that Abraham is so certain that they're going to come back? So he has faith that God said he will provide, but exactly what is it that God has promised Abraham that would give him this certainty? He's got a covenant. He's already said that he's going to be the father of many descendants and many nations. If he kills Isaac, it's done. All right? So Abraham knows, he doesn't understand what is going to happen. Not yet. That's the faith that Abraham has. God already knows. Abraham doesn't. So for him to say, you know what, we're going to go up here and I've got to sacrifice, and even if I cut Isaac's throat, I have faith that God is going to resurrect him. Let's see. What happened on the third day? I don't know. There's just so much here. All right. Abraham took the wood for the burnt offering and placed it on his son Isaac, and he himself carried the fire and the knife. As the two of them went on together, Isaac spoke up and said to his father Abraham, "Father?" "Yes, my son," Abraham replied. "The fire and wood are here," Isaac said. "But where is the lamb for the burnt offering? Where is that lamb that needs to be slaughtered? Where is that lamb that was slain before the foundation?" I don't know. There's just a little things here. Abraham answered, "God himself will provide the lamb for the burnt offering, my son." And the two of them went on together. Again, he is so confident that God will provide the sacrifice that he is going through with what God has told him to do. When they reached the place that God told him about, Abraham built an altar there and arranged the wood on it. He bound his son Isaac and laid him on the altar on top of the wood. Then he reached out his hand and took the knife to slay his son. He's ready to do it because he knows that God has made a covenant with him. But the angel of the Lord called out to him from heaven, "Abraham, Abraham." "Here I am," he replied. "Do not lay a hand on the boy," he said. "Do not do anything to him. Now I know that you fear God because you have not withheld from me your son, your only son." Abraham looked up, and there in the thicket he saw a ram caught by its horns. He went over and took the ram and sacrificed it as a burnt offering instead of his son. So Abraham called that place, "The Lord will provide," Jehovah Jireh. God will provide. Jehovah will provide. And to this day it is said, on the mountain of the Lord it will be provided. The angel of the Lord called Abraham from heaven a second time and said, "I swear by myself, declares the Lord, that because you have done this and have not withheld your son, your only son, number one, I will surely bless you and make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky and as the sand on the seashore. Your descendants will take possession of the cities of their enemies." So there's territory. "And through your offspring, all nations on earth will be blessed. All nations will be blessed through your offspring because you have obeyed me." Then Abraham returned to his servants. They set off together for Beersheba, and Abraham stayed in Beersheba. All right, so there's the covenant again. The same promises over and over. Now, I just want to ask you, this is just so powerful. Who swears by himself? Who is allowed to swear by himself? God and God alone. Here we have the angel of the Lord saying, "I swear by myself." That tells me that the angel of the Lord is God himself. Again, is this the pre-incarnate Christ? I believe it is. All the way through the Old Testament, there are times when the angel of the Lord does something. When the New Testament begins, the angel of the Lord doesn't show up anymore. I believe this is Jesus Christ, God in the flesh, God operating pre-incarnate in the Old Testament times. No one can swear by himself except God. And then, in order to say, not only do I swear by myself, but I'm going to confirm this covenant. God's already done that. So who is the angel of the Lord? It can't be any less than God, see? It can't be any less. Now then, just a couple more things real quick before we move on. Isaac, it doesn't say, we always imagine Isaac, you know, a little boy carrying a little bundle of wood. Isaac could have been in his 20s or 30s here, because there's no indication of time lapse. There's a time lapse from the first time that we hear about the age of Isaac. The next time we hear about the age of Isaac, he's 40 years old getting married. What if he was 33 years old? Isn't that amazing? Because he didn't, you know, how unusual it is for this culture to get married at 40 years old. That's really late in life. But that's what happens when Isaac marries Rebekah. He's 40 years old. All right? Now then, the other thing is this Moriah, this territory of Moriah. This is a hill that is known as Moriah in Jerusalem, and it's a ridge. It's a ridge. The high point of that ridge is one of the supposed crucifixion sites of Jesus. It's just about a half a mile away from what the Jews have seen as Mount Moriah or Temple Mount in Jerusalem today. The north end of that ridge is the high point that is known today as Golgotha. Okay, so think this through here. 4,000 years ago, God is sending the prototype Abraham, the father of many nations, with his son, his only son, the loved son, the son whose covenant God is going to work through, to this Mount Moriah. And at this point, he is taking him up to be sacrificed, believing full well that God is going to deliver him somehow, even from death, and that God provides the lamb for the sacrifice. How powerful it is that 2,000 years after that point, God sends his own son on this same ridge to die for the sake of humankind, the lamb that was slain before the foundation of the world. I believe that God fully shows us all of these examples all the way through the Old Testament, preparing all people for the coming of his son, Jesus Christ. Everything that happens in the Old Testament points to the fulfillment in his son. And this is one of the most powerful points. All right, Genesis 25. So Isaac has gotten married in the meantime, for age 40. Sarah, his mom, has died at 127 years old. That was in chapter 23, and she's buried. Then in 25, there are several things that happen here. Abraham takes another wife named Keturah. Okay? So through Keturah, she has several sons. Zimran, Jashkan, Medan, Midian. So we know that the Midianites, the Medes and the Persians are descendants out of this line. The Midianites, which is in Saudi Arabia. You remember Moses is going into the desert of Midian and meets, you know, his wife and Jethro in Midian. There's all sorts of things happening, and several of these other descendants, you're going to see something here. Then it says in verse 5, Abraham left everything he owned to Isaac. Why did he do that? Because he was the promised son. He left everything he owned to Isaac. But while he was still living, he gave gifts to the sons of his concubines and sent them away from his son Isaac to the land of the east. All right, this is important in what happens with the descendants of Abraham's sons. Number one, he leaves everything he has to Isaac. He is seen as the inheriting son. Always in all the other cultures, it's the first son who inherits. But yet over and over, God does the unthinkable by giving it to the second son, Jacob and Esau. It'll continue to happen over and over. All right. What happens is that Abraham says, everything I own goes to Isaac. However, I'm going to give gifts and things to my other sons because they are my sons, but I'm going to send them away from the son of the covenant. Where does he send them? He sends them to the land of the east, which in Jewish terminology has always meant east of the Jordan River. East of the Jordan River. What is east of the Jordan River today? The nation of Jordan, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, everything east of the Jordan River. Okay? Now then, so you put these things together. Although Abraham lived 175 years altogether, he lived 175 years. And Abraham breathed his last and died at a good old age, an old man and full of years, and he was gathered to his people. His sons Isaac and Ishmael, okay, they're there for the burial, buried him in the cave of Machpelah near Mamre. That's still there today. The Jews visit this area, this cave, because this is Father Abraham, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar the Hittite, the field Abraham had bought from the Hittites. There Abraham was buried with his wife Sarah. After Abraham's death, God blessed his son Isaac, who then lived near Beer Lahai Roy. So Isaac stayed in this territory that we now know as Israel today. All the other sons were sent to the land of the east, to the east. All right. Then in verse 12, it says, this is the account of Abraham's son Ishmael. Okay, let's find out what happens to Ishmael, whom Sarah's maidservant Hagar the Egyptian bore to Abraham. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael listed in the order of their birth, and it goes on through here and lists 12 tribes. These were the sons of Ishmael, and these are the names of the 12 tribal rulers according to their settlements and camps. Altogether, Ishmael lived 137 years. He breathed his last and died, and he was gathered to his people. His descendants settled in the area from Havilah to Shur, near the border of Egypt as you go toward Ashur. And then what? They lived in hostility toward all their brothers. Where does that come from? Well, 137 years previous to that, God said, Hagar, this son that you carry, here's what he's going to be like. And sure enough, the writer says, and that's how it worked out. He lived in hostility with all of his brothers. Okay, where is this territory? Here's the map of this area, and you can see Shur over there to the left is in the Sinai Peninsula. Ashur is up in modern day like Syria, up in that area, up where the Tigris and the Euphrates kind of begin, maybe Turkey, up in that area. Now there's two Havilahs here. There's some, you know, historical discrepancy as to exactly where Havilah is, but you'll notice both of them are on the Saudi Peninsula. There's even indication that that southern group of Havilah had migrated across the Red Sea and into eastern Africa, Ethiopia, Somalia, all of this area down in there. There's indications that those tribes had moved across and inhabited in that area in Africa also. But I want you to see where this area is, and it is the today modern Arab nations. Okay? Now then, if you go through history and follow the tribes that are listed of Ishmael, those become the Arab nations that we know today. It's east to the land of the east. All right. So here's the indication that Isaac has settled in what we now know as Israel, but it's still inhabited by Canaanites and Hittites and Amorites and Amalekites. It's not ready yet. Remember, God said 400 years will go by before they inherit this territory. But here's how I want you to prepare for this. All right, so Ishmael has been given gifts and sent to the land of the east, and all of his descendants are in this territory. All right, so just kind of get that in your mind. Now then, I want to make a brief, before we continue in Genesis, I want to make a brief little side trip just to let you understand where Islam teaches about these things that are happening in Genesis, okay? Because it is important. If you look at the genealogy chart that I showed you before, this is going from Noah with his three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. Out of Ham, the line of Ham, over there on the left, we have the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Jebusites, the Amorites, all of that group. Out of Ham is also Mizraim, and out of Mizraim come the Philistines. Okay, so you see the line of the Canaanites who are inhabiting this territory, and the line of the Philistines. Now then, by the time the Greeks come into this territory in the 300s BC, there is no more indication of the cultures of the Jebusites or the Canaanites. By that time, they are gone. There is no more history of these groups of people. All right, this is going to be important. Now then, out of the line of Shem, we have traced the line of Shem and how it goes all the way through to Abraham. And from the line of Abraham, we have Isaac and Ishmael. And from Ishmael, we have the 12 tribes and the Arab nations. Now then, the dividing point between the Jews and the Muslims have to do with Isaac and Ishmael. Who was the son that was taken to be sacrificed? Because that is the son where the blessing flows, the blessing that includes territory. The Quran teaches and the Muslims teach that it was Ishmael that was taken to be sacrificed. The Jews, Christians, the Bible says, no, it was Isaac. That's the promise line that God gives. So who owns the territory? And this is where it boils down to. Who owns this land? That's why the Muslims say, no, it was Ishmael who was the blessed son, therefore we own the land. The Jews say, no, it was Isaac, and we own the land. And that's where it all flows from. That's where it all comes from, right there. All right, there's the division. We'll get into the Jacob, how he becomes Israel, and the 12 tribes of Israel. All right, now then, here's where we need to be careful about, because here's where it's things that are taught get out of hand. All right, here's some statements, and this is not just in school books, but I just want you to see how early it starts in these cultures. In eighth grade in Syria, it's known that Jews of today do not have any connection to the land of Palestine. And that comes up over and over. As you read a lot of articles, the Muslims today teach that there's nothing on Temple Mount that says that there's ever been anything Jewish up on Temple Mount. There's never been a Jewish temple. In fact, the Jews really have no connection to this land of Palestine at all. And I read this every week. Palestinian school books, The books claim the Palestinians have first rights to the country. Remember, we were saying, well, who was here first? Well, the Canaanites were already there. The Bible says that. Before Abraham got there, the Canaanites were already there. Well, then the Arab Canaanites were here before the Jews. Therefore, the Zionistic claim of rights to the land by virtue of forefathers are a lie. Zionism is described as a movement of which the seizing of land is foremost among its tenets. I really don't see the Israelis as giant empire builders. I mean, they really haven't expanded their borders a whole lot. But anyway, the Arab Canaanites. Now remember, from the here, you can't claim to be an Arab Canaanite and a descendant of Abraham and Ishmael both. You can't. It doesn't work. All right? You understand that. But these are the things that are taught. Now then, let's see how far it goes. The Israeli Knesset or parliament. See, Israel, whenever it was made a nation, they welcomed anybody that was in this land to become citizens of Israel. And they said, and if you do, then if you're a citizen of Israel, then you can be on our parliament. You can be elected to parliament. Now, that's pretty bold, you know? Especially when you have members on parliament, Israeli parliament, that are Arab Israelis. They're Israeli citizens, but their heritage is Arab, and they're Muslim. I mean, that's pretty open here to allow them on the parliament. And then whenever you have an Israeli Knesset member that he announced, according to which a nation he called the Arab Jebusites founded the city of Jerusalem. Well, now, we'll see that the Jebusites, yes, were in this area that is now Jerusalem. But again, how do you get from the line of Ham, Canaan, and the Jebusites, and over to the line of Ishmael and the Arab nations? How do you do that? But yet that's what's being taught. All to establish, we were here first. We were here before the Jews. All right, so he says, founded the city of Jerusalem, which he referred to using the Arabic name Al-Quds, a long time before the Jews showed up there. Okay, the Jebusites were there first. But they can't be Arab Jebusites. And we'll find out about the Jebusites and what happens with them also. All right? So those are statements that are constantly made over and over and over. It's a common teaching that they're rewriting history to show that we were here first. Therefore, the Jews need to lead. And I read it all the time. All right, now then, let's go back even further than this. Let's go to the Quran. The Quran teaches. In the Quran, there are things that say, bear in mind the words of Moses to his people. He said, remember, my people, the favors which Allah has bestowed upon you. He has raised up prophets among you. Okay, so these are the people of Moses, the Israelites. He made you kings and given you that which he has given no other nation. Enter, my people, the holy land which Allah has assigned for you. Do not turn back and thus lose all. Wait a minute. The Quran says that Allah gave the Israelites the holy land? Yep. Got a problem, don't we? In chapter 10, we settled the Israelites in a secure land and provided them with good things. We settled them there. That's interesting. And chapter 17, and thereafter we said to the children of Israel, dwell in the land. When the promise of the everlasting life comes, we shall bring you all together. Gee whiz, how do we reconcile that? In the Quran, it seems to say that Allah gave some holy land to the Jewish people, to the Israelites. So there's a lot of discrepancy with what is being taught in schools and in parliament and things that people are taught every day. And that's why we as Americans and the rest of the world get so confused. You know? We think, well, maybe they were there first. Okay, so maybe that's really true. All right, the next thing is just a couple of things that you need to know. That Abraham, considered Father Abraham by the Muslims in the Quran, was neither a Jew nor a Christian. He was the first true Muslim. Abraham was the first true Muslim. Okay? Now then, remember that Muhammad did not begin to receive revelation and write what is now known as the Quran until 600 years after Christ. After Christ. He began receiving his revelations in 610 A.D. All right. So now he is writing about an incident that occurred 2,600 years before him. Moses in the Bible is about 1,500 B.C., writing about an event that occurred about 500 years earlier. All right. So kind of keep that perspective as a possible room for error. Okay? Now then, in chapter 6, it says, and remember when Abraham said to his father Azar, and again, what's Abraham's father's name in the Bible? Terah. T-E-R-A-H. Terah. So I'm not sure, you know, there's some changes in the Quran that just don't make any sense at all why they would have done it. Will you take idols for God? Surely I see you and your people are in clear error. Okay, and we showed Abraham the kingdom of the heavens and earth so that he might be of those who are certain. Now then, so in the Quran, Abraham challenges his father about his beliefs. In the Bible, all it says is that that God brought them up from Ur of the Chaldees and went into Haran in modern-day Syria, say. He never talks about any challenge between Abraham and his father over idols. It doesn't talk about that. It talks about God telling Abraham after Terah dies that I'm going to ask you to leave the land of your people and go to a land I will show you. So there's more discrepancy there that I'm not sure what's going on. Now then, in the Quran, in chapter 2 here, I just want to just show you a couple more things that have to do with Ishmael, Abraham and Ishmael. It says, when the Lord put Abraham to the proof by enjoining on him certain commandments, and Abraham fulfilled them, he said, I have appointed you a leader of mankind. And what of my descendants, asked Abraham. My covenant, said he, does not apply to the evildoers. We made the house, and this is the Kaaba in the sacred mosque in Mecca, Saudi Arabia. We made the house a resort and a sanctuary for mankind, saying, make the place where Abraham stood a house of worship. We enjoined Abraham and Ishmael to cleanse our house for those who walk around it, who meditate in it, and who kneel and prostrate themselves. Lord, said Abraham, make this a secure land and bestow plenty upon its people, those of them that believe in God in the last day. As for those that do not, he answered, I shall let them live a while, and then shall drag them to the scourge of the fire, an evil fate. Abraham and Ishmael built the house and dedicated it, saying, accept this from us, Lord. You are the one that hears all and knows all. And Lord, make us submissive to you. Make of our descendants a nation that will submit to you. Teach us our rites of worship and turn to us with mercy. Your forgiving and merciful Lord, send forth to them an apostle of their own who shall declare to them your revelations and shall instruct them in the book and in wisdom, and shall purify them of sin. You are the mighty, the wise one. Who but a foolish man would renounce the faith of Abraham? We chose him in this world and the world to come. He shall abide among the righteous. When his Lord said to him, submit, he answered, I have submitted to the Lord of the universe. Abraham enjoined the faith on his children, and so did Jacob, saying, my children, God has chosen for you the true faith. Do not depart this life except as men who have submitted to him. Okay, so here's a little separate history in the Quran that Abraham and Ishmael built the sacred mosque and the Kaaba in Mecca, Saudi Arabia. So somewhere during the life that the Bible left out, somewhere during the life of Abraham and Ishmael, they traveled into Saudi Arabia. Remember this map? So from Israel all the way into Saudi Arabia. So they would have traveled from where they were here all the way down into about here is where Mecca is, and built the sacred mosque. Okay, well, that's kind of interesting. And again, it shows that they were submissive to God. Islam means submission to Allah. And so here's a little piece of history that is taught. All right. Now then, let me read the other one to you, and then we'll have to quit. This is about the sacrifice. Okay. And it says, he said, I will take refuge with my Lord. He will give me guidance. Lord, grant me a righteous son. This is Abraham talking. Grant me a righteous son. All right. Now then, he says, we gave him news of a gentle son. Now then, most of the translations in parentheses will say Ishmael. It doesn't say Ishmael, but the reason that most people believe this is Ishmael is that a few verses later it says, we gave him Isaac, a saintly prophet. So talking about two different sons. So if it speaks of Isaac later, then this has to be Ishmael. And that's the reasoning that they go through. So we gave him news of a gentle son. And when he reached the age when we could work with him, his father said to him, my son, I dreamt that I was sacrificing you. Tell me what you think. Okay, Abraham is talking to Ishmael and saying, you know, I dreamt that I was sacrificing. What do you think about that? He replied, Father, do as you are bidden. God willing, you shall find me steadfast. And when they had both submitted to God's will, and Abraham had laid down his son prostrate upon his face, we called out to him saying, Abraham, you have fulfilled your vision. Thus do we reward the righteous. That was indeed a bitter test. We ransomed his son with a noble sacrifice and bestowed on him the praise of later generations. Peace be on Abraham. Thus do we reward the righteous. He was one of our believing servants. We gave him Isaac, a saintly prophet, and blessed them both. Among their offspring were some who did good works and others who clearly sinned against their souls. All right. So there's quite a discrepancy. Even if you ignore the two different sons, there's quite a discrepancy in this story also, because Ishmael in this story he knows what is about to happen. Isaac is innocent of what is about to occur. God has spoken to Abraham saying, here's what I want you to do. In the Quran, Abraham is saying, I had a dream. What do you think? So there's a lot, if you get into the theology of that, it just totally falls apart in the Quran. Again, if this is the same God who revealed both of these scriptures, then we've got an issue here, a giant one, okay? So those are the verses out of the Quran that don't quite jive with what we've been reading in the Bible. That's the split point between the Jews and the Muslims over who was the blessed son, and therefore, this covenant that has to do with land, who does it belong to? Yes?
Well, I'm confused why they keep using the pronoun we. Yeah. We bless Isaac and we, if they don't believe in the
Quran. All the way, and that's another great question. All the way through the Quran, anytime Allah talks, he speaks of as we. Now, one of the things that the Muslims attack Christians about wholeheartedly is our belief in the Trinity. And I'll read you verses later I've already shown you some that they attack anyone who believes that God is more than one. And they say, curse you, that say God is one of three. So that is against Christians. So why is it that every time Allah speaks in the Quran, it is as we? Because they say, God is only one. Heaven forbid that he should have a son or be associated with any other person. That is the height of blasphemy in Islam, is to associate any partner with Allah. So why is they always talk about as we? And you know what? The only thing I've ever been able to find is that they say that that's a form of respect. You're going, what? I mean, that's one of the things that the first time I read the Quran, just within the first few pages, it was we, and I'm going, now, wait a minute. How do they explain this? And I looked all over the place. So that's an issue. Yes?
Why did they go as far as to say that Ishmael was a gentle spirit,
yeah,
when it says in the Bible that he was a
wild donkey of a man? There are so many discrepancies what she's saying is, you know, in the Bible it says Ishmael is a wild donkey of a man with his hand against everyone, everyone's hand against him. But in the Quran it says we gave him a gentle son. Well, it depends, I guess, on what your perspective is. As we go through these, I'm going to kind of show you. You have to compare some of the biblical stories with what's found in the Quran, and none of them are the same. There's some huge, not only just names of people, that's, you know, pretty innocent sounding, but whenever you get into the theological problem of who God is and who Allah is, then you've got some major, major things. But out of all of the stories in the Quran, the biblical stories that are referred to in the Quran, not a single one of them match up with what's found in the Bible. Again, you have the question, if it is the same God who revealed both of these scriptures, then what happened? What happened? There's nothing in the New Testament revealed by God that contradicts or overturns anything in the Old Testament. That's why we believe that the same God reveal these scriptures. So 600 years after Christ, where did the Quran come from if not from the same God? We got some questions here. Anything else before we go? We will continue next week. We'll get into Jacob and the nation of Israel next week and see where that leads us. We run out of time way too soon. Let's have a word of prayer. Almighty God, thank you so much for your word, and it is so powerful to see things on the world stage today being played out before our eyes, and know that this has been a conflagration that has been going on for 4,000 years, as you have shown us. God, we want to stand firm in your word. We want to know that you are the one true God, and we want to be prepared to defend our faith against anything that comes up. Speaking the truth in love, as we should do, we hold your word to be the absolute truth because you are God and you cannot lie. We thank you for your word. In Jesus' name, amen. Good to see y'all.